Good.
Blog Talk Radio.
Dr. Carroll previously was the director of medicine at the Bay Pines VA Medical Center and the Bay Pines VA Hospital in St. Petersburg, Florida. If you're having it, she's also an all-time triathlete. If you're having any problems with life and you need to talk to somebody, talk to a professional. If you can't reach Dr. Carroll, who can help you out, talk to someone who can. Her offices are at 336 East Bloomingdale Avenue in Brandon, Florida. Her telephone number is 813-689-2466. Well, Ty, we got Bob, who is traveling to Sturbridge on his Harley Davidson.
Going to Sturgis. Good for Bob.
Yeah.
Left D.C. on Saturday morning, just pulled in. Awesome.
Nice.
Awesome. Z may be calling in shortly just to let you know. So If you get on familiar number, it could be Z. He's not. I think he's done training for the evening.
Nice. It's been a while. Hey, let me ask you something, Ty. What the hell's going on with the Dylan White thing? And I see now that he's been suspended by the WBC.
So, you know, he fought Oscar Rivas, a fight in which he won by unanimous decision. He was dropped in the ninth round, but, you know, overall, it was a good fight. He fought very well, defeating Oscar Rivas. The problem is that Dylan White failed a PED test before his fight with Dylan, Oscar Rivas. That came to light. The UCAD, which is the United Kingdom Anti-Doping Agency, found out about this test. They knew about the test. They had a hearing that licensed and cleared Dylan White to fight, even though he had failed this test. And they never informed Oscar Rivas' team about this. Oscar Rivas did not find out. Oscar Rivas and his team did not find out that Dylan White had failed a drugs test for their fight until after the fight occurred. In light of the fact that
that's not good.
Yeah, especially considering he just had three deaths in boxing in the last week and a half. And so the United Kingdom Anti-Doping Association knew a guy failed a drug test and still cleared him the fight and did not inform his opponent of the situation. So that's why that is such a messy issue, because obviously we're not only speaking to Dylan White and Eddie Hearn being hypocritical in their approach and, you know, sneaky in their approach, but you're also talking about a boxing governing body hiding information. You know, the first thing my brother said to you, just to let you know, is it reminds me of when John Jones failed his test against Vitor. Or was it Vitor who failed his test against John Jones? And they didn't say anything. You remember that? So that's kind of what happened here. So,
Not a
situation at all.
Hey, guys, we're rejoined by Armstead. So we've got them. We're going to have Dr. Chris come on in a few minutes.
Hey, Armstead.
Good,
let
good.
Me ask you another question, Ty. We got Manny Pacquiao may have tipped his hand as to who's going to be his next opponent in saying that he was going to go back to work for a year in the Philippines at his government job. But he would be here for the Porter-Spence fight. Out of those two, who do you think? Go ahead.
I think right now the odds-on favorite to win that fight is Spence. Whether we think so or not, he is the current biggest odds-on favorite. With that being said, at this point, he would be the bigger fight financially for Pacquiao. Obviously, they're both with Al Haymon. They're both on with PBC. Thus, it's an easy fight to make. It is the natural progression of what kind of became an unofficial welterweight tournament when Spence signed to fight Porter and Thurman signed to fight Pacquiao. So it would be the natural progression. It's a fight that's supposed to happen. Obviously, it further freezes Terrence Crawford out. Nonetheless, that is the fight I would expect Pacquiao to take next if he plans on fighting that level of competition continuing forward.
That would truly unify the 147 belts, though, right?
The only belt that would be left hanging would be Terrence Crawford's belt. And, of course, with him being the top rank. And I don't think it's Bob Arum and top rank that's trying not to make the fights. I really think it's Al Haymon and PBC. And part of it is because, you know, they kind of have a monopoly on the welterweight division. So he could keep a lot of fights in-house, make a lot of money for himself without having to deal with Bob Arum and Terrence Crawford, who potentially could come over and upset the apple cart anyway. So, you know, it's an unfortunate situation, but it's the business of the moment.
Yeah. Hey, Armstead, what's the story with the Chris Cyborg suspense that's going on with MMA, not treating her right?
To me this sounds...
Go ahead,
I'm sorry. Oh, no.
This
sounds definitely more... Yeah, this sounds more of what we've been getting from the Dana White-Chris Cyborg saga. He's made no secret that she is not his favorite, and it also seems to be like they're just oil and water when it comes to doing business together. Granted, though, they both seem to want to continue the dance, though. Chris Cyborg could easily go to Bellator and make a lot of money, you know, beating up lesser opponents. And, you know, she's also
Julia
there that she's coming close to the end of her MMA career. They got Julia Budd over there. That's right. But, you know, it seems to me like everybody wants to see a rematch of the Nunes fight. I'm sure Chris Cyborg's just trying to make sure she gets enough money. And, you know, Nunes is asking for the fight. You know, Dana White is a very shrewd businessman, and I'm pretty sure that he is stirring the pot in the media to just get the just to make sure he's going to drum up enough interest in the bout so we can have this be a headline bout of a pay-per-view MMA card, maybe UFC, you know, 247 or something like that that's going to happen later in the year. Nunes needs the fight because there really isn't anyone left for her to fight anyway after she beat Holly Holm. So I think it's going to happen. I think now this is more of a bit of peacocking, a bit of dancing around before they actually sign on the dotted line. Because, you know, she claims that Dana White's been bullying her. But, granted, I heard what Dana White said. And it, I don't know. He said a lot worse things about her in the past. And I tend to think that this is more of just a way to get – let's start talking about this now. So hopefully when the drama is going to be a lot less in a lot of these divisions later on this year, because there are a lot of big fights happening, that can be a big draw for the UFC.
I feel the same way. I mean, Armstead hit it on the nose that Dana's smart, man. He's gonna, you know, it's kind of like fishing. You know, he's gonna throw the lure out and, you know, and build up the excitement, get everyone excited, see who's biting on it. Everyone wants the Nunes Cyborg matchup. Going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have the greatest things to say about Cyborg. I like Nunes and that pick, of course.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dana's smart like that. He's a showman as well as a businessman. You know, he knows, he's seen how the hype, you know, all the smack talking behind the scenes helps build up those fights, and he wants to milk it for every dollar he can.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
While I absolutely agree
and
with you guys, a part of me right now doesn't really quite understand Dana White's motivation, though, because, you know, he's right now saying Cyborg absolutely doesn't want that fight. He's saying she's scared of Amanda Nunes and that she would prefer in the twilight of her career to fight easier fights, which only further infuriates Cyborg. Now Cyborg wants an apology, and she's,
mm-hmm.
she's referencing bullying. She's referencing the past stuff. She just mentioned how Dana White
mm-hmm.
says she looked like Wanderlei Silva in a dress. She just recently referenced that again.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, like,
yeah.
You know, she literally just
referenced
that. But
Dana White said
that,
what, 10 years ago?
Yeah, but
yeah.
My point is, though, we know that, but Cyborg just referenced it again. And she said before they can even talk
mm-hmm.
contract negotiation, and I do think this is peacocking, she says she wants an apology. But
mm-hmm.
why I don't quite
mm-hmm.
know Dana White's motivation is because what kind of contract would it be? If it's a one-fight contract, because first of all, is Cyborg going to sign a multi-fight contract? I don't know. She doesn't feel like they've been building up the featherweight
mm-hmm.
division, so she may not even want to sign a multi-fight
mm-hmm.
contract. So
right.
she may only want to sign a
mm-hmm.
one-fight contract with Amanda Nunes, in which case White may be trying to subtly push her out the door, because if she signs a one-fight contract with Amanda Nunes, well, what happens if she wins? You're not going to let her leave with your belt. So
right.
before I go ahead and make a determination on what White's trying to do, I'd be curious as to what Cyborg's trying to negotiate from a contract standpoint. Because if it's a one-fight deal, I'm pretty sure he's trying to push her out the door. If it's a potential multi-fight deal, then I'm pretty sure he's trying to drum up interest in his own twisted way.
Yeah, but
hey, Bob,
let me just say really quickly, I could see this easily being a chance for Dana White to also get rid of the featherweight division for women. It's not.
Exactly.
There's nobody.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
that's exactly what I was thinking.
I think this is going the way of the men's flyweight. This is,
exactly.
He would love for Cejudo to just stay up at 135, get rid of the division. He doesn't like it. Women's featherweight is really the most useless division in the UFC, because if you look, they don't even rank the fighters in the 145 division for women.
No,
they don't even have a ranking. They have a champion, and then they have people who just don't they just don't particularly lose weight for that particular camp, and they go in and fight. So,
and
you know,
that's why I think
Jermaine
Dana's
Grandin
been trying to push Cyborg out.
She doesn't want to fight that division either. push
yeah,
her out.
That's why I believe he's trying to push her out
to get her there in the first place, because she can't get there. Right. If she's smart, I think it would be a good move for her if she wanted to go over to PFA. They have a 155-pound division. She could fight there. She could fight Kayla Harrison. That would be a big fight. That would give her a lot of money.
Yeah.
And
$1 million.
And she wouldn't have to cut down. She walks around at 180 pounds. What the world? Why is she trying to fight at 145 when she said time and time again that the weight cut kills her? She should be fighting at 155 anyway. Then go over there and fight at 155. What are you doing? It's obvious that this is a money grab for you because this is where you can get the most eyes by fighting Amanda Nunes. After that, you have no reason to be in the UFC anymore. Women's MMA is big enough now.
Dana's trying to get rid
of her. Actually go to PFA and make money. Yeah, I agree.
And I don't think that's why I said I never thought Dana wanted that fight. Because he has nothing to do with her if she signs a long-term contract. She signs the one fight deal, she beats Nunes. He's not going to walk away from my belt. So, and like you said, I think he's trying to get the
but Nunes will still be 135 champion. She could be like, great, take the belt. Yeah, but actually, Nunes wouldn't even care. She'd be like, well, I'm still 135 champion. That's my weight class anyway. You know, that was a great, that was fun with Chris Laborde. Maybe we could do it again down the road one day for some big money fight on a Ryzen card or something. But that's it.
Right.
Who cares? It doesn't. This has this fight has no bearing on Nunes' legacy. None at all.
Megan Anderson, Chris Cyborg, Felicia Spencer, and sometimes Kat Zingano is your 145-pound division.
Right.
In the UFC.
Kat
so
is not
I think
a
Dana
145er either. She's not a 145er.
Exactly.
You,
I think so.
Think
I think honestly, Dana is saying these things to cut his losses and get rid of Cyborg. I really believe that.
Not only financially,
yep.
though, but
I
maybe
agree.
A little ego-driven on Cyborg's side because she missed her shot at Rousey. You know, she wants to try to be the ultimate big top girl in all the divisions, all the, you know what I mean, kind of thing. So maybe she's just trying to go over and you know, get a big victory over somebody with a name in the UFC before she heads out. I don't know.
Bob, what's your thoughts on the Holloway, Frankie Edgar fight?
Holloway's got great hands. Edgar is getting older. He's just not moving. He caught a lot of punches. You know, good wrestler, got the takedown. Holloway's on fire. I mean, Edgar's a tough, tough guy. I won't take anything from him. But it's, again, more and more time spent in the ring, stuff starts hurting, you know?
Max Holloway, though, is big, man. He's a big guy for 145. And he had he's 5 inches tall. He's damn near 6 feet tall. Frankie Edgar is 5'6", maybe 5'7" on a good day. Max does a great job of controlling distance. But Max walks around at 180 pounds. So, you know, it was – I don't want to say it's unfair, but the advantages that Max Holloway had going into that fight were clear. And you saw it during the fight, how he could just keep his distance and just pick Edgar apart.
Right. Before I left on vacation, we were all talking about distance. And when you can use that long arm, use it. And he nailed it.
You know the funny thing? Edgar, who was fighting at Max Holloway at 145, former champion at 155, said something that I heard him say for the first time that I think I've ever heard him say. He said, you know what? He was a little too big for me. And Mac, you know, that's never something I've heard Frankie say. You know what I mean? He fought Benson Henderson.
Yeah.
He fought these guys. But yet, he said, Max was just a little too big for me, to the point where his coach and his team, they have been trying to for a while. They're trying to get him to drop down a bantamweight. The fact of the matter is, at 145, I don't know who beats Max. I like Volkanovski, but he presents the same kind of package that Frankie Edgar did. He's a little younger, more explosive, but he's going to have some of the same limitations in size and age. Max is just a very big and dynamic package at 145. He reminds me kind of like of a 145 El Kikui, where he's just a little bit longer and bigger than everybody, but then he has this crazy gas tank and he just drowns you. So one of the things Frank Yeager was able to do was mitigate Max's work rate by foot with his feet, you know, with his footwork. Because if he couldn't, then Max drowns you. He drowns you. He did it to Jose Aldo. He did it to Brian Ortega. I didn't think he'd do it to Frankie Edgar because I knew Frankie Edgar's footwork would keep him out of trouble. But at the same time, I knew Frankie wouldn't be able to close the distance effectively enough to create offense to win the fight. So, Max, I just don't know who gets that 145.
Mm-hmm.
Unless we're talking about
well
the 145
said,
women's division, then we put him against Cyborg, and who knows. So,
Yeah. They weigh the same, so maybe only 145 or that can match up with them size wise. Yeah.
Yeah, that's about it, man.
Yeah, guys, we're joined by Dr. Chris tonight, and Chris, I had a chance to talk to the people in Thurman's camp this week. He got tapped in the first round and seemed to be shook up. The next two rounds, he was 10-9. But then he started towards the end of the fight to start to come on, but he lost by decision. But the important thing on there that Dan told me was that when Pacquiao, in that first round, when he smacked him down, he also hit him with a couple body shots, which broke one of Keith's ribs. Yet he kept on fighting the whole fight. What's your thoughts, Chris?
Well, I was the only guy last week that picked Sherman. I think he's going to hold his ground. Mm-hmm. He's not going to jump backwards.
Mm-hmm.
Pacquiao comes out, he throws one jab. What's Keith do? He jumps backwards. Like Joe Louis was in there. Joe Louis was jabbing him, you know? Pacquiao closed the gap real fast with another jab, but Keith couldn't go back anymore. And then Pacquiao, instead of throwing a straight left, and he threw a right hook, knocked Keith right on his butt. Up to that point, I never saw a body punch. So I don't know where the hell it came from. I didn't see it. I didn't see Keith react. He reacted.
Yeah, I didn't see it in the first round.
First round. Which is what I didn't think Keith was going back away from Pacquiao. Why would you jump backwards when a guy comes out and throws a simple jab at you? Why would you jump back a foot? I never understood
that.
Not holding your ground. That's how you count. You can slip a jab. You can take it over the right shoulder or the left shoulder. You can knock it down with your hand. There's four or five ways to take a jab. I mean, you're not talking about a heavy-handed guy. But what he didn't realize, how fast Pacquiao could close the gap. And then through jab, right hook. For a left-hander, that's the same as a right-hander hooking off the jab. And he dumped Keith right on his butt because he was all balanced going backwards. So I thought, uh-oh, here we go. Same old Keith. You know, I didn't see any drinking rib. You know?
No, I didn't see anything that would have given away a potential rib injury. In fact, he actually started to climb back in the fight by doing exactly what Dr. Chris was saying. He started holding his ground. He started walking Pacquiao down, and he started taking rounds. It was when he got hit with that body shot that killed his momentum. That's the only time I saw him visibly affected by a body shot. So, like, you know, maybe that rib was already broken, or maybe he broke it when he threw that shot. But he was obviously
body shots are beautiful. They're underrated.
Oh my God, yeah! Like he was obviously affected by that body shot, but I didn't see any like Dr. Chris. I didn't see anything before that, and you know, maybe he had a good poker face. But Keith doesn't kind of have a great poker face. You know when he's hurt, you know. So, but I thought you know, he did his best work when he did exactly what Dr. Chris was asking him to do.
And then, like, through the middle rounds, he hit Pacquiao with some awful hard shots. Pacquiao took every one of them. I didn't think he had that great a chin. I mean, he smacked Pacquiao a couple of times. Had no effect. Then about the eighth or ninth round, it looked like to me Keith was befuddled. Like, okay, he took my best punches. He already knocked me down. What do I do next for an encore? You know? And I think he just lost, looked like he lost interest in the end of the fight. You know, looked like he just going to hang in there to finish up. But I don't think it was his best fight at all.
You know what, Dr. Chris? I think once he got hit with that body shot, then he couldn't continue the game plan because the game plan called for him. He was bringing the fight back within range by fighting Pacquiao on the inside. Once he got hit with that body shot, then he just couldn't go back on the inside without the potential of getting stopped. And, he didn't want to take that chance. So then he started, fighting a little bit more off the back foot, obviously.
Yeah. Did the x-rays show a broken rib? Did they x-ray him and see a broken rib? Did they go to a doctor and have an x-ray? His rib was broke? Is that what Dan said? I didn't hear that. I didn't hear anybody say that. But if he
yeah,
says
I,
he felt the river
that, yeah.
hurt, you know, the rib hurts so damn bad when you get hit there. This was quite a common football injury. And when you got your intercostal muscles that hold the ribs up and down together, when you tear one of them, it's awful.
Yeah.
It's awful. You can't breathe. You can't take a punch there. You can't play football. I mean, some of my best friends on the team, they had to lay out 6 months. I mean, 6 games. They missed 6 games with a torn rib muscle because they never heal. That would make sense if that's what happened, you know. But Pacquiao was a little bit too fast for a guy his age. I didn't think he could. I never, in all the fights I've seen Pacquiao, I never saw him throw a double jab and a right hook right off the jab. Never saw him do it. I mean, and he closed like Goosen. Goosen was doing showing the fight over. And he said Pacquiao had to cover 10 feet in 1 second. And Keith wasn't used to that. You know, and he said, that's what happened.
No, because Keith thought he was away. That's why his hands were down, too. Not only was he backing out, but his hands were down. His chin was in the air.
He backed it.
Yeah.
So, you know what? Keith will be the better fighter if he doesn't let that undefeated, you know, everybody loses one once in a while. So, he could come back bigger and stronger. He's going to study that fight. He's going to obviously see what happened. And maybe he'll change his style. You know, don't go backwards. Don't go. That's not your style. He's not a tall guy. You know. So we'll see.
We got somebody on here that we haven't had on for a couple of weeks. And he is our fight instructor, our fight guy that breaks the style down. Zito, how you doing tonight?
How's it going? It's great to be back with you guys. Ty, Dr. Chris, it's wonderful to be with you guys again. Butch, my Fighting Words family. I hear you guys talking about the Pacquiao and Keith Thurman fight.
Yep. Yeah, we want your input on that.
I'm going to take it probably somewhere that people haven't really heard of, or people haven't heard. And it's basically from the 1800s up until, I'm going to say, the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
When with boxers, it was toughness was cherished. It was mandatory to be tough. You couldn't find a champion back in antiquity that couldn't take a punch or dole out or take, you know, punishment, or it couldn't take a single hard shot like that. Yeah, that'd go down. But it was very rare. I don't care how hard a guy hit. It was rare for guys to go out like that. Now you had guys like Marciano who could bang a guy out, Foreman, who could, you know, I mean, you had certain guys that even coming up then, I mean, some guys just weren't as tough as other guys. But your top champions, your top fighters were tough. And there was no going around that. Not only that, you had to fight. I mean, it was more rigorous then. You had to fight more fights. Yeah, you couldn't scout your opponents. So you couldn't train for certain styles. You had to be able to adapt in the ring, you know, off the fly, just off of whoever. So really, you had to be tough. It's as simple as that. Coming up nowadays, as the world moves faster and you see more highlight plays and more, you know, flashy this and flashy that, boxing kind of is trying to go that direction, in all honesty, in my opinion. One thing you're always going to see, hype. You're going to see hype before trueness. I mean, you're going to have unproven guys, I mean, that are going to have big names and be talked about with the historical legends. And to be honest, it's not that kind of party nowadays. Nowadays, you're not matched up like that. Nowadays, it could be 8 titles out there. You can have 2 of them, and you can be talked like you're the king, or you could be almost considered the king, to where back in the day, you had to fight everybody to be the one champion of that weight division. You had to fight everybody. It wasn't a whole bunch of titles. It was one title, and you had people, when you had it, you had everyone coming at you. So you couldn't avoid this. You couldn't duck that. Now, bringing that back to Keith and Pacquiao. The toughness part, Keith is talented. He hits pretty hard. But when you make it to the top levels of certain of the fighters of boxing, where you're not going to stop people from touching you. You're not going to stop these guys from laying good shots on you. When that happens and you don't have that toughness, it's going to show. And that'll stop you from being an elite fighter. It's as simple as that. I don't care how fast you are, how good your defense is. If you don't have a good enough measure of toughness, then you cannot be a top fighter. You can't stay up there, at least. You cannot stay up there and be matched. Keith has the dog in him because, I mean, he stepped through the contact. He willingly embraced the contact to a point. The only thing is, that's inside of him. The armor on him is not that tough, to be honest. It's not that tough. And that's why, you know, a fighter knows who he is. So that's why a lot of times, you know, that running, not running style, but that outside elusive style, you know, to, you know, contact only on his turf style, that a fighter knows his limit as far as physicality. And that's a part of it. I really feel that was a part of that style thing. If you're not that tough and you're really talented, you're not going to put your toughness in front of a guy to be tested. You're going to move around and have that contact on your terms. With Keith, he is a fighter who goes out and he'll start fast. Boom, boom, boom. Win the first three rounds, then he can go ahead and use his feet to go ahead and manipulate, win a round here and there to go out to get a decision. He's done that in the past, however many, maybe four or five fights, to be honest. Except for this one. This one, he didn't get the fast start. Pacquiao got the knockdown.
He tried to start fast. He tried to start fast.
And when Pacquiao knocked him down, I was listening to you guys. Pacquiao knocked him down. Keith, they both were technically wrong. But when the offense is technically wrong and the defense is technically wrong, well, the defense is the one that usually suffers.
Yeah,
Pacquiao, even in the Broner fight, when Pacquiao knocked Keith down, he was running to Keith. He wasn't shuffling fast. He was running one foot after the other, after Keith. With a fighter that's doing that, you're supposed to step to the side, step dead out the way, to the side.
Shoot a straight right down the middle of the southpaw.
Keith moves back, straight back. He's shuffling straight back against a person who's running, who's at a sprint toward him. You're not going to move back faster than that guy's going to sprint forward. That you cannot shuffle backward than a person running forward. That's you can't do that. So he's not going to outrun him. He stayed on that same line that Pacquiao's running. Of course, Pacquiao's going to catch him at the end of the same line. So and Keith, he tried to lean back, so that helped him lose his feet.
Yeah.
The shot hit him pretty good, so and Keith had to sit down and weigh things out.
He was moving too linear.
Problem is, he was too linear, too on the tracks, too much on the straightaway. So, I mean, that was a knockdown. Keith brought it back. He started bringing it back. He started making Pacquiao respect his power. So, now he's winning rounds in virtue of Pacquiao is doing with Keith usually does in fights. He's trying to run around, trying to use his outside boxing, trying to keep Keith at bay for a bit. Problem was, Pacquiao was pretty successful with that because he was outboxing Keith. That surprised me. His timing and just his craft, he was outboxing Keith. Keith was bringing it back, but he wasn't bringing it back to the point of to winning. He was bringing it back, making a better account of himself. So when he did get hit with that body shot, that changed the rest of the tone of the fight to me. Keith tried to, but that tone changed the rest of the tone of the fight. It might have been ninth or tenth round, But
it was like the ninth, he could. It was the ninth, and he couldn't kind of come forward anymore like that.
Yeah, exactly. In the preceding rounds, he was there to kind of get out boxed because he didn't want to put himself out there. So I mean, to be honest, I mean he put up a good account of himself. He put up the best account of himself he could without getting hurt, without going out there and getting himself knocked out or hurt. And I mean that's the most I could say. Pacquiao looked his age to me, but he also looked the more experienced fighter.
Yeah.
Hey, let me ask Chris, your buddy Yui Fury is coming back on August, what the hell time is it? August 31st, he's going to be fighting Alexander Povetkin on the Lomachenko-Campbell card. What's your thought about that one?
I don't think he's a good enough opponent. You're talking about the champion, right? You're talking about talking about his brother?
The big Mamu. No, he's talking about cousin Yui.
It's Kahuna.
His cousin.
It's cousin Yui Fury.
Mamu.
Yeah. Oh, Yui. Oh, well, Yui, living off his brother's, name, and he's going to make some money. But I don't like the Russian that much. I don't think that much of him. I mean, if there's anybody he can beat, it's going to be that Russian, because he's not that good. He's not that big. He's not that powerful. At least I don't think so. I don't think much of that fight. I mean, it's a fill-in. He's going to be on the undercard. He's going to be on the undercard, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm not excited about that fight. I want to see the real thing anymore. I want to see who that. I want to see him fight our champion and I want to see that fight, and I want to see this Mexican, this heavy set Mexican. I want to see if that was a one shot deal. Was he a flash in a pan, or can he do it again?
Several shot deal.
Double fat, yeah.
He's trying to lose weight to get in the ring with Joshua. He's gone through a program now to lose some weight to be able to be a little.
He won't be able to fight if he loses weight. He won't be able to fight. He's nice and fat, and he's getting some strength. And he's got that big gut, and he's like the guys that are going to fight this week. That Polish guy.
Uh-huh.
I think they trained together.
Oh, Adam Kownacki against Chris Areola. Yes. That is Saturday.
Yeah,
right.
I think that Adam and the Mexican, I think they share the same dinner table. eat about a half a pound of spaghetti half a pound of spaghetti. Those guys are fat.
I'm actually looking forward to the Yuri Fury Alexander Povetkin fight for a couple different reasons. One, we still don't really know what to make of Yuri Fury. He's a young kid. He's 25, I believe. He's still very young. He's got some skills. He's not as fluid as Tyson, but he does fight a lot like Tyson Fury. And he's been in the ring already with a Joseph Parker. He made a good account of himself. Came up a little short in the UK. A lot of people thought maybe that fight could have gone to Fury or a draw. So he made a pretty good account of himself. So I'm interested to see what Povetkin has left, because, last time we saw him, he was getting knocked out by Joshua. Also, Povetkin's going to be the most experienced, most dangerous opponent Yuri Fury's been in with. So even though these aren't the top guys, this will start to suss out where Yuri Fury is as a contender, as a potential contender for one of the titles eventually. So, it's the kind of fights that you got to have to kind of see who these next guys are going to be. And again, Fury's only 25. So it could be, Povetkin's last ride, or it could be, Fury, not necessarily a coming out party, but where he really steps up and becomes known as more of a contender than just Tyson Fury's younger cousin. So I'm kind of interested in that to a certain extent.
Yeah, that's
This Fury and Povetkin fight has boring decision written all over it. I can't see it any other way. Fury's too inexperienced. Povetkin's too old. Povetkin's going to be trying to get at Fury, and Fury can't. He can't knock a little kid out. So I mean, it's going to be. I pick Fury to win a very much a stinker. I just don't see any.
And if Fury wins, that will be his biggest scalp to date.
Great.
Yeah, I can see it. I can see that. And real quick about Ruiz and gaining weight, I don't like it unless
he's
losing weight and he wants to lose weight. I don't like him necessarily losing weight unless it's more or less to get a little more agile, a little more with his head slipping, you know, just to get a little more. I mean, I understand the endurance. But more agility, just because I like the weight he was putting on Joshua's chin. I don't see how Joshua could stop that necessarily, but the weight, his punching and the weight he had, that was very effective. And I'm not sure if he loses too much weight that he'll have that same effect. He might get there the same, I mean, even a little more, but if he's not having that effect, then Joshua may be able to turn things around or may be able to adjust.
In true context of his weight loss statement, that's also in accord with the fact that he's like, I'm going to have a full camp this time.
Sorry.
He didn't have a full camp last time. So by virtue of him having a full camp, he expects to come in with a little less weight on him. So that's the true nature of that comment, just to let you know.
God.
Well, what do you think,
Bob? They're going to have a new pre-fight measurement. I don't know if you used to measure your chest or arm length.
Oh, God, here we go.
They're going to have a new one. Your waist, 60 pounds versus 50 inches. Who's got the fattest stomach? Ruiz or Adam Kornacki? Who's got the biggest belly? I'd like to
From
see
the
that.
From the spine
to
the belly button.
get the tape around a big fat gut. I would say Ruiz would win. I think Ruiz is fatter than.
Y'all not far behind. Chris Yoel is not far behind.
He's just far behind in relevance, unfortunately. That's all.
That's definite.
You know.
Yeah, I think he's going to live up to his name in this one. They call him the Nightmare? This may be a nightmare fight for him.
I think so.
One thing is, Kornacki, he is going to bring it. I haven't seen Areola have the stamina, let alone other stuff, to deal with something like Kornacki. Simple as that.
The problem is Areola always brings it. And you're bringing it to a younger, fresher, harder puncher. So,
Who's going to be there working.
Yeah, Areola won't be there.
Do you have any thoughts on this fight?
Yeah, no, I didn't see the fight. I don't know who you guys are talking about, but I love it because you guys are always cracking me up. Like, I'm a heavy set guy, and I got good head movement. You know, losing weight is not going to make my head move any quicker.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? But you know, you start cutting weight, and then you lose your power. You know, you've got that extra weight. Yeah. You know what I mean? You get used to. You know, we've seen so many guys like in MMA and stuff that cut. Go up and down in weight classes. They might dominate one, and they go to another one. It's like a whole new world. It's how you move. It's how these guys are hitting harder or not as hard. Maybe they're faster. Maybe they, you know what I mean? It's just, it changes everything up. But, you know, I love all your guys' descriptive words about the fat Mexican guy and everything else. They're cracking me up.
See, you know, the thing is, though, is like Andy Reid, and this is what you guys know, no matter how much weight a guy carries to a certain extent, when you are trained and you've been doing it for a while, you have experience, you're so relaxed, you can fight all day. You might not be able to run down a damn street, but you can fight all damn day because you're relaxed and you know how to do it. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I always could spar significantly longer than I could fucking run. I could spar significantly longer than I could ever run. And I was never a fat guy. I was a lean guy. So, you know, my coach was always a heavy set guy who could fight for days because they're just so relaxed. Andy Ruiz, you could watch that fight over again, and Andy Ruiz was very relaxed, and Joshua was very tense, and so you could easily see who would get tired first. in spite of their actual physical shape.
Ruiz was relaxed when he got knocked down.
I think in fighting, one hard thing to do is cut weight.
The other thing is, when a guy's fat like that, there's no sense sitting in the body. You sink your hand in about 12 inches of log. You ain't going to hurt him. Mm. You know what I mean? He's too fat.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, his ribs got about a foot of lower hide on him. You know what I mean? He ain't going to feel that body shot. And he takes a good shot to the head, that Nicky. He never marks.
Yeah.
His face don't mark. He gets punched a lot, but he doesn't mark. I mean, I don't see how long coming close to this fight. I think
that's a good point, Dr. Chris. When Conor McGregor went to fight Floyd Mayweather, it might have been Floyd Mayweather's uncle who said, you know, Conor McGregor has that torso like a model, that V-shaped, thin, narrow waist. He said it's ripe for body shots.
Yeah.
You make a very good point. I remember they said that right before that fight.
Yeah. So it's going to be – I'm anxious to see it. I just like it. I think this will be his last fight. I think it'll be his last fight.
Areola's?
I think it'll be his last fight.
Yeah.
This guy never gets tired of throwing punches. And Areola's not going to be able to get away from him. He's too slow himself. I think
and he likes to come forward, too. He likes to come forward,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he gets beat up in this one, and that's about it.
He just beat
up. Kalnacki is going to be a little flatter.
The thing about Kalnacki, and especially in this matchup, is Areola, he cannot have success anywhere. And where Areola operates best, that's going to be where he's going to get it worse. Kalnacki he's real good at not getting hit clean right there while getting clean shots off. The guy has
counter strike,
very, very good eye. Very good eye to where he's in within both of you guys' punching range, and he'll parry. He'll slightly slip his head this way and that way while he's busy with his hand. So, I've seen him get hit clean a few times, but really, especially while he's working, he doesn't get hit clean a lot. So, that's going to be tough for Areola, who's not the cleanest.
No, Areola's going to get knocked out. No question.
I honestly think he's either going to get knocked out or he's going to get beat up pretty bad until he stops. It's not going to go. It's going to be It's going to be a very action-packed fight.
Action-packed.
For however long it lasts, it's going to be an action-packed fight. Absolutely.
But Areola doesn't stay. I don't give him much of a chance. I don't care what he says or how he talks. Actually, he's talking better now. He doesn't talk like a jerk or an idiot. He used to sound like an idiot when he talked before. Mm. He used bad, foul language. And he's a little bit better, a little smoother now, you know?
Biggest problem you compare MMA to boxing, Areola's had 3 title shots, and to this day, as we speak, as he's 37 years old, he has never beaten a top 10 contender. Yet has had 3 title shots. Because why? Because he makes for a great soundbite in the interview, and he's fun to watch. So, I like that we're really starting to talk MMA because we could talk about the differences, too. That's one of the big differences. You don't get a title shot in MMA without beating a top 10 contender. None this day.
And that's a fan base.
Carnicki's going to eat about 50 pierogies a day, and it's going to show when he comes in the ring. You know, they give you a lot of room to add in pierogies.
50 pierogies a day.
Wow.
Pierogies are pretty fattening as it is, you know.
The Polish whale, that's going to be in there.
The Polish whale, is that what we're calling it? Let's just hope we never have him on the show, okay?
Get him on the show. Andy
Ruiz.
With all us guys on this show, we got Bob Alexander, who's a pro fighter, and then everybody else is at least trained or fought on some level. But guess what? The moment you get out of Kanaki on the show being mad because somebody called him the fat Polish guy, I'm going to say it was Dr. Chris. I will have no problem pointing the finger. I don't care who the fighter on this show. I'm going to point the finger.
Wasn't me.
Bob, we broke. They brought up Conor McGregor again.
And the last news I saw was he's pissed at Dana White for saying that Jorge Masvidal is too big for him. What's your thoughts?
Again, smoke and mirrors. It's all hype. You know, you need good. I mean, back in the day, we had good guys, bad guys. Your Randy Couture's, your Chuck Liddell's versus Tito Ortiz. You know, it's good guy, bad guy stuff. And then it developed into just how much smack talk you can talk. And McGregor, you know, out smack talked everybody. So now he's in it with the big cheese. You know, it's the same thing with Cyborg. You know, I think it's all smoke and mirrors. It's all fishing, trying to get, you know, people to bite on it. You know, you throw a comment on social media. You know, I said this or he said that, and you see how many people respond. You see where the public's at.
Yeah.
Can I make a fight out of this? Can I make some money? I mean, Dana's always looking for a way to make money. And I think that's what it is. You know, Conor's smart. Up until he started throwing stuff at a bus and stuff like that. He just got too big of a head. You know what I mean? Like, they think they're untouchable. You know, and when you're on top for a minute. I mean, I admit when I was undefeated, like I was like, oh, I don't even got to train anymore. Hoo, hoo, hoo. And then I got woken up real quick. You know what I mean? It happens to everybody. You know, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And when you get on the top, man, you're like, oh, I don't need nothing. You know, look at me. And I think that's what it is. You know, no one can really beat Conor right now. So the comeback with Conor, they've got to make some hype. So if there's no one to go back and forth with Conor on right now, well, my goal be with that and Dana. I mean, Dana is just a figurehead. They sold all that stuff out.
That's a good point.
He's helping them make money. You know?
Yeah, good point.
Conor, he's learned from the school of Floyd. It's as simple as that. Conor, he had his moments, you know, back in the day, especially with the with Nate Diaz, as far as the smack talking.
Yeah,
back
Diaz,
and forth.
Bad boy. Yeah, right.
But like now, ever since that Floyd fight, Conor's kind of turned into jerk marketing tool.
Dude, he made so much money. Why go back?
That's kind of what's going on, really. He got the shot at the title. He lost. And so the only thing that really he wants is another shot at the title.
Right. He wants that big paycheck.
Yeah, so there's nothing for him to fight for outside of a big paycheck and a specific accolade. He's just not going to come back and fight Dennis Cyber.
No.
You know what I mean?
No.
He's got to fight somebody. Yeah, he's a little too big right now.
He tasted that big. When Mayweather and Pacquiao fought years ago, they made more money in that fight than like most countries make in a year. You know what I mean? That one night. And so Conor got a taste of that, man. And if I got paid once like that, like I may never get hit again either. You know what I mean? Like, hey, I'm done.
And that corrupted him to a certain extent.
And what you're definitely not going to do with all that money is be like, oh, you know what? I just lost the title shot, but I'm going to come back and work my way up the ranks. No, you're going to be like, dude, I make the most money. As soon as you get a title shot available, I want it.
Right.
Or
an
eliminator against a very big guy, you know, a very popular dude. So
I'm not going to make money.
As goofy as it is, it's just human nature.
Spoiled.
Let me ask you another question. WBA gave Canelo Alvarez and Golden Boy an extension to make a decision on the mandatory Sergey Derevchenko. I believe is it this Monday or next Monday is what the extension was. Do you think that'll ever come? Anybody?
So I think it's the IBF, and it was supposed to go to purse bid, but because Canelo Golden Boy started negotiating with Dabella and Sergey Derevchenko in good faith, purse bid got pushed back. And so because they're negotiating right now in good faith, they're going to extend that time frame. At the same time, there is talk that he's negotiating with Kovalev for potential November or December fight with Sergey Kovalev, in which case the IBF, because they're pretty – strict about their mandatories, they may strip him. We know Kovalev is fighting his mandatory over in Russia against Anthony Yarde. If the IBF would be willing to have Sergey Derevchenko wait so Canelo could do a this light heavyweight kind of fight, then maybe that happens. But right now because all the negotiations are in good faith, they're willing to extend the purse bid and the limitations.
if Canelo goes up to fight, if he goes up to fight Sergey Kovalev, it's hard for me to see him coming back down to fight Derevchenko. That's a leap. That's a heavyweight leap there.
Well, here's the thing, though, right? If he goes up to fight here's what I don't know. If he were to fight Sergey Kovalev, would he fight at 175? Would it be
a
catch weight? Would there would definitely be a rehydration cost. So I don't know how much of the actual – how pragmatic it is for him to fight Kovalev. It may be maybe something he sees. But at the same time, there's a part of me, and it's funny because the theme for the show has the kind of bells and whistles. We were talking about Dana and people just saying stuff to get a reaction.
Yeah.
Well, there's a part of me that thinks the whole Sergey Kovalev thing is to kind of keep Dazin off his back because he absolutely refuses to do business with Gennady Golovkin. Not that he's afraid of him. He just doesn't want to give him a paycheck because he has disdain for him. So by negotiating with Kovalev, the zone's like, well, we'd love to have that fight. So it kind of just keeps Golovkin at bat. I wouldn't be surprised if he signed to fight Derevchenko right after Golovkin signed to fight somebody. But what he's really, the whole thing, what it comes down to is trying to freeze Golovkin out. That's really what all this is about. Even him pushing back the date is all because he absolutely doesn't want to do business with Golovkin.
And they both signed with Dazin.
Yeah, the zone. So I really think, the theme of the show, I think it's much ado about nothing. It's a lot of bells and whistles as well. Smoke and mirrors.
Hey, let me ask
you
one more question.
I don't think that Kovalev fight would be any good for Canelo. If he wins, he's going to say, well, if Canelo won, that guy's washed up. He hadn't beaten anybody lately. And if the other guy wins, he's going to say, well, you fought a bigger man. It's not going to prove anything. I think his best fight is to fight Triple G. And let's let everybody see it and complete the trilogy. And then, you know, they go off with their money and count their money somewhere.
Let me tell you, Dr.
Go
Chris, fight boxing politics, you know, it wouldn't fight. Prime example, Andre Ward, Chad Dawson. Andre Ward bulled Chad Dawson all the way down to
Chad Dawson bulled himself down. Chad Dawson said, I come to 168. That was Chad Dawson's fault.
I'm going to disagree because
Chad Dawson threw that out there.
It happened that way. Chad Dawson came down. So, really, I mean, that's Canelo, as far as Canelo and Kovalev, if they'll go ahead and negotiate as far as that goes, maybe the fight politics will swing the fight in Canelo's way.
Oh, it would. At the very least, if it's at 175, politics will dictate that there will be a rehydration clause. If not, it's going to be at a catchweight. First of all, one thing we know, and this is everybody automatically knows, Canelo is a tremendous fighter. The problem people have with Canelo is that they kind of think boxing politics favors him. That is the main issue. That's Golovkin's issue with Canelo. And because of things he has said, that's
politics.
Why Canelo doesn't want to do business with him. Yeah?
Yeah.
So.
The Russian's too big for him anyway. We got nothing to prove fighting a guy that big. Heavy-handed, heavy puncher. And, you know, I don't know what I'm going to see that fight, to be honest with you. You know. But we'll see what happens. What, are we getting late, Frank?
Yeah, we're getting to sort of the end of our hour here, Chris.
Okay.
Bob, I really appreciate you staying with us this week, especially since you're out in Sturgis. I hope you enjoy yourself out there.
On the road, at the Tuckle Saloon. Stop
dude,
by.
Dude, that is sweet.
Sturgis!
Yeah.
That is sweet.
Yeah.
Bald white guy with a goatee. Fat guy. Yeah, fat guy. White guy. Bald. Look for me. All right, guys. I'll catch you next week.
Have fun.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Yeah.
See you guys.
Okay, Chris.
All right, Frank. Take care.
Take it easy.
Take care, Z.
All right, thanks.
Hey, Zito, I like your analogy on toughness. I didn't ever get a chance to answer that. I think you're right on that. You got a good point there.
There you go.
Carry it over next week.
That's what we're always looking for, to be on the show.
Toughness is important. And then when you're not tough, you're not tough. That's all there is to it.
Yeah.
You can't find that anywhere. You can't train that into a guy. You're either all or you aren't, you know? And I got what you were saying, because you made me think back of thinking of guys like Basilio, tough as nails.
Oh, my God.
Had a face to show it. You know, Carmen Basilio, you had to have an axe to fight him. You know, I mean, he just couldn't back off. Didn't care what he, you know, the onion farmer, they called him. His face looked like an onion. He was all beat up, rough looking.
And you had guys like that.
Yeah. And who was that other guy that gave Hagler a draw? Italian name, Vito Fermo.
Vito Anafermo.
Boy, he was a looker. Boy, you could tell he could take a shot.
He was a bleeder.
His only problem was he was a bleeder.
In the ring,
Vito looked like he got punched since he's a baby. It looked like he came out the womb, they just started punching him.
He got mad when they missed him. All right, guys. See you next week. All right.
Okay, Chris. See, it's been a pleasure having you back on. You want to lead us out?
Oh, it's been wonderful being back on. I miss you guys. I'm going to try to make it on as much as I can. I want to thank everybody. I couldn't catch everybody who was on here. I came on a little late. Apologies for that. But I want to thank my Fighting Words family. These shows are definitely in memory of Bob and Coach Mel. And if you want to hear any Fighting Words, please do call.
That's right. Ty?
Z, Bob, Butch, Armstead, and Dr. Chris. Damn, I love this show. It's very fun. It's one of the highlights of my week. I hope everyone has a good week. Bob is our co-pilot. Coach Mel is watching over us. Everyone take care.
Great. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States, the Armed Forces, and the men and women of Police and Fire Services. But the one thing that you don't get is what you get right here on this program. You feel you get not only the knowledge of the guys that are on, you get the love of the family that they have, and each and every one of them is a family man. So we like to make sure that everybody knows that they are family people, they take care of their families, and they're very knowledgeable people. We could not do this program without them. These programs are brought to you. These programs are also dedicated to those who lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcat, Sergeant Thomas Bainger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Handler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Onofa Crispin, Lakeland PD, Chief Al Hogle, Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Department, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Hillsborough County Deputy Sheriff Charlie Kotloff, Delaware State Trooper Sergeant Rodney Bond, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Ardeth Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, F. DeLee, Special Inspector Vinny Galaccio, Delaware State Trooper Corporal Stephen Ballard, Kissimmee Patrol Officer Matt Baxter, Kissimmee Sergeant Sam Howard, Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Bill Gentry, Highlands County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Clay Zerba, Clay County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Natalie Corona, L.A. County Sheriff's Department, Deputy April Rodriguez, Pasco County Sheriff's Department, Officer Robert McKenna, Biloxi, Kentucky Police Department. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and sunshine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hallow of his hands. Good night, God bless, and have a great week.
Shem Aleichem. Shekma Yilama Shema Zahilma Suna Shene Vorat Fet Akuig again my
Yeah.